I'm talking to David Jordan here in a farm right on the border. David, what's the name of this locality?
Well, there's been a couple of different names to it. There, Leggy Kelly is one name, and Wattlebridge area is another name. I suppose the actual town land here is Drumbochna.
I see.
Newton Butler.
And so your farm is all on the north side.
Yes.
But you did have a piece of land on the south side.
Yeah, at one time. Yeah.
Okay.
And we would have got the opportunity of maybe consolidating our farm and moved.
Yeah.
Got a farm in the northern side and sold the one on the southern side of the border.
Initially it was on the southern side.
Yeah.
So. Mm-hmm. And the Jordans, how many generations of your family farming this land?
Well, my father come here in 1933.
Okay.
As a 14-year-old lad to live here. And
Was he just a farming helper? Or?
No, his father purchased this house on 14 acres of land at that time.
Oh, so it was your grandfather who who first came?
Yeah, but my father would have come to live here.
Yes.
And his father was still at the home farm up at Coothill in County Cavan. And from that, I suppose he developed the farm.
And who did he buy it from? Who was farming here at that time?
There was a person, the name of Clendinning. I would have got that on the old deed, of the farm.
And they'd been here for a long time before that, I suppose.
They would have had the post office.
Yeah.
What would have been in the countryside long ago. They would have had the post office in this house here, and it moved to different houses in the area.
How did that work?
Until it eventually closed. But through time, then it moved from one house to another.
That's extraordinary. So if you wanted to post a letter, you had to go to the house that the post office was in.
The post box was in the very end of the house, next the road here, at that time. I remember it being there whenever I was small. It was our larder instead of a fridge, because it was in the wall, it was cool.
Oh, I see, yeah.
In the stonework.
So tell me, were you brought up as in the Catholic tradition or the Protestant tradition?
The Protestant tradition, yeah. Presbyterian. We go to a wee church out in the country, and we're, very small in numbers. I think there's maybe 7 families in our church, and we're a very, everybody knows everybody, and we're just like a small or enlarged family unit.
I see.
And it's good that way. Everybody's, knows everybody and knows their needs. Or
of course, and you can help one another.
In that way.
Yeah. So, now, David, you grew up right through the Troubles. You were here from
1952. I was born.
Yeah.
So, I suppose 1969 would have been the first that I would have ever, heard of anything. I would have been at college, agricultural college that year, 69-70. And I suppose that would have been the first that we would ever have heard anything on the news or.
Yeah.
But up until that, and even after that, we worked on the farm and on farms and neighbours, and still do, down through the troubles of, you know, of different faiths. And that all disappeared or all changed once the troubles really came. I suppose put that wee bit of suspicion between each of us. But, you know, to an extent you did always go to your neighbour and help him at his work, and he would have come to you. Back at that time, there would have been a lot more dependence on your neighbour.
I see.
To help you on the farm.
Mm-hmm.
And likewise him. And it was a lot more labour intensive, maybe. Manpower.
Yes.
Not as much tractor work as there is nowadays. But
how physical was that border out there on the road? I mean, you're right on it. You know, was there a checkpoint there?
Well, we were actually outside the checkpoint.
On the north side?
On the southern side.
Oh, yes.
The checkpoint was a mile and a half down the road.
Towards Newton Butler.
Yeah. So we were actually on the periphery of, on the outside of it. It kind of left you isolated.
That's interesting. Really?
If you wanted help, you didn't get it.
Yeah.
We really, back in that time, whenever them checkpoints were set up, there had been three murders in the town of Newton Butler in that 1980. And I remember that so well. I was married in that year, and the three of them had happened, two of them before I was married and one after. And you had to be so careful, you know, in what you'd done and where you went. You didn't, you know, go out that much.
Were you living in fear at that time? I mean, were you worried about your
young
family? You'd
be worried about your family, and yeah. I remember one morning going out here to feed the calves on a field up the road here, and they opened the gate and found a body.
Who had been
murdered.
Who did it turn out to be?
I never heard.
Oh, his head was hooded, was it?
Yeah, covered. And all I heard was afterwards that he had been classed as an informer and had been shot and dumped just on the northern side of the border. And that would have been back before the checkpoints even come. That was my one experience of, you know, maybe death. But yeah, the checkpoints, we had to go through them nearly every day to get to the children, to school. And remember being at a dance one night, and the police come in and told us that if you were going through the checkpoint, you'd want to get home, get back home. There must have been some threat come in at that time that there was a bomb or something on its way to the checkpoint, and they didn't know, so the checkpoints were going to be, you know, literally closed down.
Yeah.
Where nobody would get through. So we gathered up and went home. But even at that time, you were, when you'd go out in the morning, you were always wary of what was to be outside or where, machinery or anything. But I suppose that whole era now has passed.
Yeah, but
checkpoints and all are gone.
But because you had a farm right here on the border, it would be a very, as you say, vulnerable place. But were you approached at any stage, and you know, where people would like to use your house maybe, or as a you know, just going from one side to the other?
I had got a new car. It was where I had, you know, the year before I had got a new Hillman Hunter car, and it was about a year old at the time. And there was one evening that I had been looking at my cattle on the out farms, and on my way home I noticed maybe suspicious activity of vehicles where they shouldn't have been. And I proceeded on home and lifted a neighbour's child at her house to leave him home to his own house. And it was just coming dusk, darkness was falling, and it was in the beginning of May in 1976. And whenever I dropped this young lad off at his home, I come back down the avenue and was approached by a number of armed men. I was fortunate to get past them and get out onto the road and come on back to my own house. I later learnt that they wanted the car, and probably me, to drive the car into a local village with a bomb on board. I was so fortunate that got away that night, because I don't know if the bomb would have went off with me in the car. I was very relieved to get back to my own home. It was actually on the very border that they tried to take the car off me. And I later learnt that there was a bomb prepared in the area. The Gardaí had told me, and that it was going to be loaded onto my car.
What year was that?
In 1976. The 5th of May, 1976.
Yeah. You were getting on with your work. You were, you know, you weren't attached to any organization or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, you suffered greatly during that time.
In the fear aspect of your. So not let alone yourself, your family. You know, you were always conscious of the children, you know, coming home at night, or you wouldn't, I suppose, maybe have slept until that appear back.
And then when you were going back and forth through the border, there was no difficulty going this way because there wasn't a check. But then when you were going to, having the border guards just up the road, was that, I know it's a mile and a half away, but was it a certain sense of security in that?
Oh, yeah, it was, yes. And at that time, there had been those number of murders, in the area. And, it seemed to have stopped. They weren't getting as free a hand to move in and out, to murder people. But yeah, we were outside that. But yeah, you had that sense that they were there, that they were doing a job, protecting lives. Yeah, they would have.
And the years of the troubles, has it left a mark on you? Like, do you feel, do you still feel vulnerable?
In 2012, we were sitting in the house here, and there was shots fired at and the outbuildings. Went out and got some of the shells and the bullets on the road. My life was threatened at that time.
Were you actually threatened, you?
Yeah.
In what way? Did you get a letter, or what? How did that happen?
They issued certain statements to the press and television, and they didn't. Neither of them did run with it. They didn't, because of where I was living.
They didn't publish what you...
No. For my safety.
I see. Who did that?
Fermanagh Brigade of the Provisional IRA.
And they still exist, do they? I mean, they're still active in that way.
They still done that, I know. You are practically the first person that has ever interviewed me about this. And at that time, we did not want any publicity or anything because of where we were living. I think that was that has been the last incident that has ever happened, to us. And everything seems to have settled down.
Yeah.
But
why were you threatened? Why were those shots fired on your premises?
What did trying to think of what it said in the letter.
Have you got the letter?
No.
Yeah.
I didn't want it. That it would have been issued to the press, that statement.
And so was this a kind of did they want you out of here?
Yeah.
Is that it? Ethnic cleansing?
Yep. But But, I mean, I would have neighbours, Roman Catholic neighbours, that would have come to me when they heard it. And they were disgusted with it. And were very sympathetic to it, you know, that.
Yeah. That's amazing, isn't it? I appreciate you telling me this. I was not at all aware that, you know, this was continuing. And you have a very young family, you know, running this place as well.
The children are all
with you.
They're all up now.
Yeah.
Yeah, they are now. Three of them are married now.
Yeah. So, just to go back to the farm, it's mixed farm, is it?
Yep. Yeah, mainly dairy.
Yeah.
Milking.
And how big is your farm? How many acres of land have you?
Around 140 acres.
So it's a good farm.
Yep. Yeah.
And good quality land. Mixed.
You're in County Fermanagh now, and I think the level of the water table does come up.
Does it? Yeah.
Pretty quick.
Yeah.
It has been a pretty bad year, you know, in respect of this last 2 months have been really wet. A lot of cattle are housed at the present time. But we take it as it comes.
I know, yeah.
Depending
on whether the weather, you know, it's everything to do with the weather, isn't it?
Oh, it is, And you work round the weather, you have to.
Yeah. To the you know, kind of, do you see the border as being a serious issue still? Do you think, you know, kind of, your tradition and your customs and so on, they have been going on for many generations. So do you take part in these marches and so on?
Well, I would have took part in the marches in my local town. Yeah. And then on the, I suppose, the 12th of July, you would go to the Lake of It, and it would have been classed as a family day out for the family. Yeah, I would still take part in them. I suppose the one thing that maybe left it difficult was the different, in 1996, I think it started, where the parading became an issue in the local town. And those times would have been, you know, edgy, or you still wanted to go and support each other in that way. But I suppose life keeps evolving. There's such changes have happened now from when I was growing up in the type of society that there is. And, you know, that, what way would you put it? The modernization of all this different technology.
It's made
a lot of changes.
It has indeed, yeah. And you lived through most of those changes, as well as you know, say customs and traditions. You also have, you know, kind of, as you said earlier, the there was more labor on the farm than you know, you didn't have big tractors and you didn't have combine harvesters and so on. You know,
no, indeed, it would have been all, I suppose, a finger bar mower to do the mowing.
And when you were working with your father out there, Did you go around to other farms, as you say, at that time, you know, kind of helping other farms out?
Yeah.
Kind of a metal, you know, mm-hmm. where farmers would come together to help each other.
Yeah, that's the way it was done in those times. You would have worked, you know, particularly at making the hay. There wouldn't have been as much silage, you know, at that time until later. Yeah, and even at the silage time, you would have went to your neighbour and helped him at his silage, and he would have come to you. Yeah. And that was, I suppose, you know, the neighbourly end of it. You were working with each other and helping each other out a lot of the time. And even with working with cattle, where you would help dosing and moving cattle and
yeah.
on your farm.
And so that kind of died down when the trouble started, did it? You know, that
to an extent it did. Yeah, but then you have to realise things were changing mechanically.
Yeah.
At that stage anyway, yeah. But yeah, you would still go to help your neighbour. Maybe not as often. But yeah, there would be certain times of the year that you would still
help out. Yeah.
And that mean, you know, that's both sides. I would go to help my own Catholic neighbours, and they would come to me. I don't see any problems in that.
I see, yeah. You're living right here beside, there's a petrol pumps down the way. Owns that, or who's, it's on the south side, is it? Or
no, that is on the northern side.
I see.
It is, I suppose it is there now, must be there 30 years or so, that particular pumps. But, you know, over the years there has been a number of incidents, you know, with the like of those filling stations all along the border, where they would have been, you know, raided, and there would have been a couple of bombings at different ones way back. And that was maybe part two of the ethnic cleansing. There was one particular incident where there was a bomb at the filling station. And the bomb had to be dealt with by these bomb disposable crew, and there was one lad who was killed in it, and he was from way down south of Ireland. He joined the army and went into, you know, dismantling the bombs. So, I mean, you know, it was, the troubles really was affecting everybody at that time.
Where did that happen, that explosion?
It's about a mile round the road here to another set of filling station.
I see.
Yeah.
So, the bomb was in, there, and,
yeah,
and then it
had been left at the property, and they had to come to defuse it. And the lad that was killed was from way down, I think it was Wexford, or that he had.
So, and the bomb was
in the northern side. Yeah.
So what was he doing?
He had joined the army in England.
Oh, the British army.
Yeah.
And so he happened to be an Irishman just who was looking after.
He was defusing, had been in the bomb squad.
Yeah.
and he lost his life in it.
Yeah. Was it like living in a war zone? I mean, with all that going on around you.
Yeah. Well, I think you just had to get on with your life. And in a lot of the senses, I suppose, you kept your head down. Yeah.
But I mean, so that's no way to live, keeping your head down and getting on with it.
Well, I think that was the way you had to live at that time. Yeah, that was the way you had to live. Times would have changed a lot now since that all has in the past. It's becoming a distant memory.
Yes, it is.
But, I mean, you always think of the loss of life that there was at that time.
And the just from a historical point of view, then the situation you lived through, I suppose, the hard border, if you like, and then it disappeared altogether, and traffic, I'm sure, was much freer up and down your road here, because you're right on the roadside.
Yeah, yeah. All the traffic has really increased.
Yeah.
You know, well, I suppose that there's so many more lorries on the road nowadays. And that has all been part of the way Ireland, I suppose, has developed or evolved in the EU. In the European market. A lot of the milk now would all go to different milk plants in Virginia and Peterborough from County Fermanagh. So that would be one thing that if this hard border comes in, I don't know what way it will work, but I'm sure they'll find some way of getting around that. In one way, you know, you're going back to before the EU was formed, when there was no such thing as an EU. You move freely between one country and another. Fair enough, you would have had the customs on the border at that time, but there wasn't the same amount of traffic that there is nowadays, and I suppose all that can be, you know, controlled so much easier on computers and no paperwork really.
And the big question is do you see yourself as an Irishman or?
Yeah, I am Irish. Yeah.
Yeah. And are you you were saying earlier before we started that you see the field that. The border is a little stream which crosses the road there, and the difference is there isn't a difference.
There isn't a difference, no. Right along the border, there's no physical barrier.
No.
You wouldn't know any difference between crossing the drain and on one side or the other.
And so this political going back and forth, would you like to see a united Ireland, or is that something that you ever thought about?
I don't think I would like to see United Ireland for the simple aspect. We are so dependent on the population that is in the UK for to take all our food that we produce, and both our milk and our beef, and the farming end of it. We're such a small fish in a big pond, and I cannot see a future outside of being part of the UK. If we were to leave the UK, you're going to lose a lot of your markets. I can't. Whenever I go you way back into history, whenever Ireland was all part of the UK, whether we like it or not, the English would have built our cities. All the buildings that they built, and all the estates that was around the country, and they would give a lot of work to the local communities at that time. Where we are living here would have been part of an estate, Castle Sanderson's. I still think that you need to think of your markets, of where you're going to get sale for your produce. There's so many million people in England, and what have we here? 1.2 and 3 million in the south. And, you know, for the aspect of work all down the generations.
Do you see a dude?
We went to England to get work.
Oh, yeah. There's so much immigration from here to England, yeah.
My own family, both on my father and my mother's side, would have had brothers and sisters that left and went away to work in England. We really are the poor, poor neighbour.
I suppose we are.
Yeah.
But before I let you go, so you told me that your family moved from Coot Hill originally. Your ancestors moved up here. Have you any reason? Did they marry in to here, or did they start working and?
Well, I suppose
got the land that way.
There was nine of a family, and they must have wanted to expand at that time, or they weren't going to all be fit to live at home on the farm at home. So the idea would have been to move to try to buy another farm and set up a new unit members of the family. Just.
So what year would it have been?
In 1933.
In 1933. So this land would have come up for sale and they bought it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
So it's fantastic. Not knowing, of course, what was going to happen in the future. And are you happy here? And could you see yourself staying here and being here?
Oh, yes, and farming I am happy here.
This is your home.
This is my home. Yeah, I wouldn't ever think of moving. No, and my son, he's at home now too on the farm, so we would hope to stay and farm on this land.
Yeah. It's a fascinating story. I'm shocked to hear that you just scratched the surface and it's still there, you know, that you're living in that.
But you know, too, I put that to the back of my mind.
You're a great man to do that and to keep going.
I don't. If you started to dwell on that, I don't think you would get anywhere or to achieve anything on your farm. You have to.
And you told me the last time it happened was 2012 when bullets were fired in. And from 1970 onwards, were there many other threats like that?
No.
It was just waking up one morning and finding that...
Well, it had happened at 8 o'clock at night, this incident, and we were all sitting in the kitchen here. We just finished the milking and had come in from the yard, and we heard the shots going off.
Yeah.
But I suppose that's life.
That's life. It's pretty hard to, as you say, to dwell in things like that.
I suppose, you know, there would have been, I suppose, one particular family that would have been caught or whatever, been convicted and was in jail for a number of years. And everybody would have said how quiet it was when this particular gentleman was away. So he got out again. And
was that the Good Friday Agreement?
No. That would have been, well, it would have been during it too, yeah, before the ceasefire. And he was caught the second time and in jail again. And there was peace and quiet when he was away. You know that.
Is that man out now again?
Yeah, but he maintains he's a reformed character. He hasn't done anything now.
Yeah.
Lately.
Could you see yourself trying to come to terms with what happened and then maybe try and respect each other's traditions and customs and come together and just be united as live together as a community, mixed community?
Well, we have live together as a mixed community. Yeah. But there would be certain individuals that would manipulate and maybe prevent the like of that mixed community that they don't really want. They would want maybe to have control of you. Whereas, you know, it's up to each individual. And I mean, Roman Catholics would have said this to me too. And you have your faith. I have my faith. We both, as individuals, we both respect each other. And whenever I would be away at the 12th of July, my a Roman Catholic neighbour and me looking after the farm.
Imagine, yeah.
You know that nothing had, you know, with the effect of you being off your farm for that day, he would drive past to see that there were no vehicles in the yard or
intruders
during the evening time.
Yeah. Listen, David, thank you. Thank you for telling me your story. I appreciate it very much indeed.
Well, thank you.
David Jordan, thank you.
For listening to me.